As early as next week, Congress is expected to pass the first comprehensive energy bill since 2007. To reach that deal, senators dropped an amendment on offshore drilling and one that would send money to Flint, Michigan to help with the city's water crisis. It will be the first big energy legislation since the American energy landscape was dramatically changed by hydraulic fracturing, or fracking. The controversial drilling technique has helped the U.S. increase its oil and gas production. Ernest Moniz has been President Obama's energy secretary since 2013. He joins us now in the studio. And Secretary Moniz, thanks for being here.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, let's start with this energy bill and get your response. They don't come along very often. That's the first one like it since the Bush administration.
We're very encouraged. And I must say that the Chair Murkowski and Ranking Member Cantwell have worked very well together and have reached out to us for a lot of discussion. The energy bill, as it seems to be moving, will have many very, very positive elements. It will really, I think, reinforce our commitment to energy technology innovation. It will recognize our reorganization in terms of better integration of energy and science programs. It will recognize our increasing responsibilities in emergency response for energy infrastructure disruptions.
Well, it's a big bill, so there's a lot in there. It's 420 pages long. It seems like the real meat of it, though, is a modernization of the energy grid in the United States, of the transportation systems mm-hmm. for oil and gas. Talk about the need there.
What we see is a collection of risks that we need to look at together for resilience of the grid in the 21st century. We have the expectation, unfortunately, of increasing extreme weather.
We've seen it fail.
We have we have cyber risks that are growing. We have physical risks that we have seen demonstrated in parts of the country. We need to address this technologically. Storage, for example, would be a major new addition. But we also need to address the regulatory structures and the policy issues. And, of course, companies must address business models. The utility business model is changing. It must change because technology is driving such a change, for example, with the increased use of distributed generation.
You could forgive people for being surprised that this bill got anywhere in the Senate. Energy, obviously, one of the major contentious issues in the United States right now between Republicans and Democrats. What do you think allowed this to happen?
Well, I think Senators Murkowski and Cantwell have done a very good job in looking for the places where they can have bipartisan support. There are many other issues that are not in the bill, which would have certainly led to much more contention.
Well, there were amendments there that were scrapped at the end, the offshore drilling provisions and the money for Flint water restoration.
Well, the Flint water restoration was not originally part of the bill, of course. But yes, many issues were either handled before, I might say. For example, in December, things like lifting the oil export ban and extending tax incentives for renewables were already, in some sense, off the table. And they have focused on those areas that make significant progress and yet can draw bipartisan support. I would say that if you look at the House as well last year, Chairman Upton and Ranking Member Pallone had made a lot of good progress towards a bipartisan bill. And then, unfortunately, came a slew of amendments that broke the bipartisan agreement. I'm certainly hoping the Senate bill will allow them to go back also in that spirit of getting an effective, pragmatic, bipartisan bill.
Also this week, big news, Peabody Energy, the country's largest coal company, declares bankruptcy. As the Secretary for Energy, when you hear something like that, what do you think?
Well, one thing, of course, we recognize that there has been a dramatic shift from coal to natural gas in the electricity sector. I want to emphasize that that has been largely driven by market conditions, namely the very low price of natural gas. We predict, the Energy Information Administration predicts, that in 2016 it'll be the first full year where natural gas has a larger share of electricity production than coal. As I say, when you look at natural gas prices of $2 per million BTU and even less, that has been a principal driver. It's also led, by the way, to about a 15% reduction in CO2 emissions from the power sector since 2007.
Critics of natural gas say that it is not the bridge technology that it should be, that cheap natural gas makes solar and wind energy less desirable. So there is that. But I want to ask you about losses in the coal industry, job losses in the coal industry. There are people in Wyoming, in Kentucky, who blame the Obama administration's policies, the Clean Power Plan, restrictions on coal burning in this country, for some of these bankruptcies and job losses. What do you say to those people who feel like their life may never be the same because of Obama administration policies?
Well, first of all, obviously we're very concerned about dislocations in the economy and specifically job losses. But again, I want to emphasize we really need to keep the issue straight. The principal shift from coal, as I say, has been market-driven by natural gas prices. The impact has been much bigger on coal and nuclear than it has been on renewables growth in the country. The Clean Power Plan is very important for our meeting the lower carbon future that we need. But I remind you, it comes into effect in 2022. What we are seeing now in these dislocations is, again, principally market-driven. Finally, I would say that we continue to invest billions of dollars in trying to establish a technology called carbon capture and sequestration that will allow coal use in the future in a low carbon world.
But the tens of thousands of people who have lost their jobs in those industries, I mean, where do they find work?
Well, the Obama administration has put a program forward called Power Plus that is specifically aimed at helping displaced workers. Ultimately, it's about retraining. It's about more economic development. It's about other opportunities. For example,
but that takes time, Secretary. I mean, for people who have lost their job yesterday, who need a job tomorrow, they don't have time to wait for the job training. They don't have time to wait for the renewable energy new economy to bloom in by 2030, for instance.
Look, all we can do is work with the states, work with the governors, work with the localities to try to minimize the effects of those dislocations. Anytime there is a major shift, clearly there are issues of workers. We are very committed to doing all that we can to help them.
I want to ask you about Paris. Clearly, you were one of the United States' most important negotiators in Paris last year. You helped bring nearly 200 countries together to keep warming below 2 degrees Celsius in the future. If a Republican wins the White House in November, do you think the agreement holds up?
Well, first of all, I want to emphasize that the administration widely was engaged in the negotiation, but clearly the leader was Secretary Kerry from the Department of State.
You got a lot of credit, too.
Well, we helped, I think, particularly in emphasizing the role of innovation as underpinning the agreement and underpinning future increased ambition in lowering carbon. So I do want to clarify that. In terms of the next administration, the activities under the president's climate action plan are based upon existing authorities and complex rulemaking processes that are in law and, frankly, would require similar processes to re-examine.
So Ted Cruz says he would walk away from it. You're saying he can't.
We're saying that a lot of this is established now in rules that have been put in place. And if Mr. Cruz or anyone else wanted to walk away from it, they would need to go through the same established rulemaking process.
It's a question about legacy that gets even bigger when you talk about the Clean Power Plan as well. It is before the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has a very important vacancy. Winning for the Democrats in November is very important, not only for Paris, but for the Clean Power Plan. It seems like there is a chance that President Obama's work on climate and energy just could be unraveled.
I expect that we will, no matter who is elected, obviously if Democratic is elected, given the discussions in the campaign, we would fully expect very strong support for climate. Republicans in the campaign have made less assuring statements, shall we say.
That's putting it lightly.
But again, A, there is the set of rules in place, but B, I believe public opinion is clearly shifting towards recognizing the importance of addressing climate change. And I firmly believe that we are going to see within a relatively small number of years congressional legislative action to address climate change in an economy-wide approach. The president, when he announced the Climate Action Plan, he first said, we would love to work with Congress in getting a legislative solution. In the absence of that, however, we can't wait, and we will move forward by exercising the executive authorities sector by sector.
Which he has done a lot in this last couple of months of his administration. Right. To end, I've got to ask you a very serious question. It's about your hair. People love it.
That's not serious.
People write about it. No, it's not serious. No, but what is that? Do you think any cabinet member in the United States history has ever had such talked about hair?
I guess it, similar hair, certainly in the 18th century. I'm not sure it was talked about so much. I have no idea. I have not changed in decades, and so I consider it amusing.
Yeah. U.S. Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz, thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you.